Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Special.
Hello.
Happy 9 years.
9 years.
9 years we've been putting up with each other's
crap.
I know.
I can't believe we've survived this long.
Right?
So what was the actual date of the...
The 17th.
17th.
So it was like Monday.
17th of February.
Yeah. Feb 17. 9 years. 469 episodes. Yeah. This is 70. 470. Wow. It's been fun. It's been a blast.
It has. It has. It's been. I treat it like my poker night. You know, the boys type thing. It's like, yeah, it's my night away.
Derek's only got one friend. Oh, my God. Wait, that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I got a dog, too.
Yeah. But yeah, 9 years. Yeah. Tonight's episode is what, 469, 470?
470.
470.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, 469 episodes, and at least one more to go.
At least one.
Until next week.
Yeah.
Winter hit us.
It did, big time. Like, it's kind of refreshing. Like, it's been, the last time I remember, it was like mid to late 2000s, like 2005 to about 2008 or 9. We had a couple winters that had a lot of snow. Like, we were...
Wasn't that when Snowmageddon happened?
No, no.
When was Snowmageddon?
I don't know. I don't know if I was here for that.
Yeah, when they ended up shutting down like half of Toronto.
Oh, and they had to get... I was
the,
living up...
Yeah.
So that would have been 99, 2000? Because Mel Lastman was the mayor. He called in the reserves
the military yeah.
And the military was shoveling sidewalks.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
Was it really that long ago?
It was. I was not
time
living
flies.
Here. I remember thinking of, what's wrong with those people in Ontario?
Right? I was thinking, what's wrong with those people in Ontario? And I was in Ontario.
Yeah. And it really wasn't that a lot. Wasn't, from what I recall, it was on the news. There wasn't really that much snow.
I think they just weren't prepared.
He just panicked.
So many years of no snow, and then yeah, everybody make for the lifeboats.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we had another big dump like that.
It was a fair amount, and like I was saying, like 2005 to 2009, I remember there was a couple of winters there where there was so much snow on my shoveling off from my driveway onto the lawn that I actually at one point in like middle of winter, I had to get out on my lawn with snowshoes because I was having trouble throwing the snow high enough. So I had to stamp down the lawn. So instead of 6-8 feet high, it was only like 4 or 5 feet high.
Well, right now the squirrels, they just have to stand up to radar bird feeders. They don't have to climb poles, jump from the tree. They can just stand right up and touch the bird feeder.
But yeah, so it was different. It was, the region, they canceled. Schools were actually canceled. It's been almost 2 years since schools. School buses canceled at the bat of an eyelash. It's like, oh, school buses are canceled. It's like, what? Why this time?
A lot of people stayed home from work, which was nice.
Yeah.
Made for a great drive in. Yeah, no, it was, I watched my neighbors go out like 3 or 4 times to shovel.
Yeah.
And I said, no. I refused to, so I left it all the one day, and then Sunday, I went out in the evening because the snow was tapering off, it said, on the weather channel, and then so it actually stopped.
Yeah.
So I went out and did my entire drive once, because I have a snowblower, right?
Yeah.
So, just totally did my lawn, or my driveway nice and...
Yeah.
And the whole deal. And then in the middle of the night, the snowplow came by and did
it
wasn't a big feeling. I could have gone over it with my truck. So I got the snowblower out, and half hour later, I was back in the house. And I'm not going out 4 times to do the snow. I don't have that kind of... I got better things to do.
We were away all weekend, and so we arrived back home at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And all the snow had went solid. It was like...
Oh, yes.
And the wind drove from the snowplow across the front of the driveway. We had to break it up with a shovel just so we could shovel it. We had to hack away at it. It's like, oh, no. It was a lot of work. I was exhausted.
I never even thought of that. See, I need to get a small trailer
And dump snow in other people's driveways?
Yeah. No, I just go by and do people's driveways.
Yeah.
Mind you, I've got the drive on mine. So it, like, you just press down the one handle.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It drives, right? Yeah. It's got the little motor drive in it. I could have just gone from house to house and just knocked on the door.
$20?
$20. I could have made a mint, an absolute mint. Yeah. They would have been happy handing over $20.
Sure. $20. That's cheap.
Yeah. Do my whole, even pay for all the gas and still have a healthy fat wallet afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So of course, you'd pay taxes on it though, right?
Yes, I would fill out all the appropriate forms and
declare it on your taxes.
Yeah, I'd like to declare the $7,000 I made shoveling snow. Get out. And every single waiter I know also declares their tips. Yeah. So while this snowstorm was happening, where were you, Derek?
We went, me, Siobhan, the kids, we went to Silent Lake Camping. They get a little bit more snow up there than we did down here. Well, you're anywhere north of 7, you're getting a lot more snow. So we were just south of Bancroft. It was nice. It was had a lot of snow. And so there was already a lot of snow. And then there was more snow. So it was really nice. We hung out, did some snowshoeing, did some hiking and whatever. That was there's only a lot of the trails are ski trails in the area. And so we didn't want to walk on the ski trails, obviously. And so there's only a few trails that you could hike or snowshoe on. But and there's a couple of mixed use too. But it's a really nice area. There's a lot of trails in the area. And there's a fair amount of people there. I didn't get the impression that they're constantly busy, because a lot of the campsites when we first arrived on the Friday, they everything was freshly snow, it was like plowed and stuff, but it doesn't look like anybody had been on the sites.
Right.
And so our site was, it was plowed and stuff, but it doesn't look like anybody had ever pitched a tent on it.
No, that's not bad.
There's a couple RVs there that look like they're seasonal pass holders.
Okay.
So because they were there, they were set up and they would look like they were there for the long run. And so I saw at least three or four of those. There was, we were one of two hot tents. There was a whole bunch of people in cold tents. And, there was a family of two young kids. They came in on Saturday and left on Monday, but they were just in a cold tent. And so Sunday night it got really cold, and they moved into the vehicle and ran their truck all night.
Oh man. Yeah, my days of cold tenting are over.
Yeah.
I've got no want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was nice. It was the driving was easy. It was a nice hard pack layer. The wood was nice and dry for the fire. We had a wood stove, so the wood was nice and dry. It was good quality. The one heated washroom that they had open was way across the campground, so we had to drive to it. It was a 20-25 minute walk to get to it, or you know, a quick 5-10 minute drive. So that wasn't too bad.
Okay. And
for the most part, like, you know, I can pee in a snowbank, but but there's two.
But I can't write my name.
Yeah, exactly. But it was nice. It was they have yurts. There's some new yurts that are being built there, brand new. They're not in service yet. And there's a bunch of cabins you can rent. There's a lot of people just, you know, the ice pop-up tents for ice fishing.
Oh, yeah, the ice fishing ones,
A bunch of people had those things. And so there was a fair crowd there. There was a lot of people. But like I said, it looks like they were there for Family Day weekend. A lot of these campsites didn't look heavily used. So, but it was nice. It was a really good weekend. It was neat to watch the snow constantly build up on the roof outside, and most of the snow came during the day, and so we just constantly tapped the tent walls to watch the avalanche of snow come off.
Yeah,
so it worked out really well. Every time we go with a wood stove, I don't know if maybe I keep it too warm in there, but we always melt down, and so if we backcountry camping, it always just, the water goes away. But when you're on a seasonal campsite, a car camping campsite, it's just hard ground. So the water doesn't drain away. So I remember a couple times going to Mew, I would have to had a bucket and a scoop, and I'd scoop up water. And I did the same thing this weekend. I probably filled, like I used my big pot for cooking, I probably threw 30 of them out the door into the snowbank.
You don't have a big tarp you play on the bottom?
We have a outdoor mat that we put under the cots. And in the area up front, we did try what you do with your tent, but we only had a few of them, and it melted out all the snow from underneath the boards. And so I still had to bail out because there are some areas near the stove that it just went right down to bare ground.
See, we went out and bought one of those heavy-duty tarps from Crappy Tire.
Okay.
And we lay that down.
Mm-hmm.
And that way water can't come up.
Oh, okay.
Through it. Yeah. Like if you get the cheap ones, mm-hmm. the cheap blue tarps, yeah. but there's heavy duty black ones.
Yeah.
And we put one of those out and the water doesn't come through it.
Huh.
So you maybe try one of those ones. Yeah. I think it was only like 40, 50 bucks or something like that.
Have to try that.
You know, and then, yeah, it fits. Like it's big enough that it goes outside of the tent a little bit on the sides and you can just fold them back in and build the snow up. Around it. So it sort of acts like a tub.
Yeah.
Right? So the water's not melting and coming in. But you're still going to get, if you don't raise your stove high enough, you're still going to get the melt under the snow.
Exactly. And that's what
happened. Or get a welder's blanket or whatever.
Yeah. We were thinking maybe if we had like one of those packing blankets from U-Haul or something like that, right?
I don't know. Because I got one of those. But I don't think I would use that under the stove.
Well, no. With the layer of boards, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Just enough to keep, because what I want to do is I want to keep the snow from melting underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't find it. I had it before the move to the new house, but I had this 12 by 12 or 12 by 15 outdoor, indoor fake carpet, fake grass thing.
Oh, yeah.
Green carpet.
Yeah.
But I could not find it. And so what that is good for is when we've used that, it insulates and keeps the snow from melting underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not slippery because tarps are slippery. We've used tarps before and you're slipping and sliding. And
yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's why I like the board on top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is because that way you can sit on your chair, whatever.
And you're not poking holes.
And you don't have your boots on.
Yeah.
So you're not worried about getting your feet soaked and stuff like that or cold. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all. And unfortunately, it comes down to what can you fit in your car.
Exactly. Yeah, we were well packed. We regretted not taking a trailer because we really had to pack things in.
Yeah. I've been contemplating. I got a small utility trailer out back I'm going to refurbish into something
tow. Something you can live in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something I can live in so I don't need to just put the tent on that.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really nice to have all the fresh snow and
hiking.
Kids had a lot of fun. So Beckett was constantly just, he was jumping into snowbanks and making chairs on snowbanks and running and flying over the snowbanks. And
as young boys do.
Credit to him for having all that energy, but yeah, he was constantly. So it made the walks very slow because it was like, what is he doing now? So he just wasn't keeping
up. He's not bothering you. Just be happy with that.
But you know, you want to go for a walk and you want to get the blood flow going and you know, get a little sweat going and get a good walk in. And but no, it was like constantly waiting. Oh wow.
We're going this way when you're done horse playing. Find us up the trail somewhere. We'll wait when we get back to the car.
Yeah.
Snowshoeing, skiing or anything?
No skiing. We couldn't find, Siobhan's the only one with cross country skis.
Right.
So, I couldn't find her boots. No. So she couldn't.
They're probably with the green grass.
Yeah, probably. They're somewhere. Yeah.
Yes, there's probably half a house full of stuff left at the old house.
Well, at the old house, everything was perfectly organized. We knew exactly where anything was at any one time, but there's no storage in this house, so everything has to be in boxes somewhere in the shed or something like that, right? So it's hard to find stuff.
It's around. Any animals?
We saw some hawks. We saw footprints of stuff, but we just a few birds. I don't recall seeing anything else. We saw more at home in the last few days than we've seen.
Really?
Up at Silent Lake. Yeah, we didn't. There wasn't much. We saw footprints of stuff that had gone by, rabbits and so on, but
right.
We didn't see anything other than the hawk or two.
You figured there might be tons of little birds and some squirrels around.
We didn't see the squirrels, but we did see those little chickadee things. Mm-hmm.
The old chickadee things.
Yeah, they're little tiny black and gray, yeah. Like the size of a golf ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Black cap chickadees?
Yeah, we saw some of those. But yeah, I don't really think of them as seeing an animal. It's just
I don't think of them as birds.
They're little golf.
They're too small to be birds.
They're golf balls with wings.
that's like anybody that owns a big dog. That little chihuahua, that ain't a dog.
Not a dog. I don't consider that an animal.
Well, at least you guys got out.
It was nice.
You guys got out last year. No, you guys were RV camping last year.
Last year we went. We did an Ottawa tour, so we did Parliament and right. Some museums and some art museums and all stuff like that. So, Group of Seven stuff and Tom yeah. Thompson stuff. It was a really good weekend. It was a lot more simple, a lot easier. Like,
right.
We were at the end of the weekend. We were trying to get all the stuff unpacked and sort through everything. I remember looking at Siobhan. I said, yeah, this is a lot more work than it's worth it, I think. Yeah, it's for the kids. It's like, yeah, you're right.
Then where are they?
Yeah, why aren't they
down here helping
out? How come they're not sorting these clothes? Right? And the tent. We just packed up the tent loosely, right? Just yeah. Because we had to get it home.
Gee, I've never done that.
Because, well, it wouldn't fit back in its bag. It was so coated with snow and ice. So anyway, so we hung that in the basement, in the laundry room and down in the basement. And it was flaked out, and there was snow and water. I had to scoop up snow off the floor and throw it in the downstairs sink. It was like, oh, my God, there's water everywhere.
Yeah, I'm lucky we have a two-car garage lengthwise.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got little hooks and hoists and stuff on the ceiling. And so I could just hook it up and hang it in my garage. But, it thaws out nicely and dries out. And then we got to lay out all our tarps out on the driveway and fold it all up when it's dry to put it back in the bag and bring it in the house to keep the mice away.
Yeah. There was trees right over top of the tent, and I hadn't really thought about it. I'll know for next time, that's for sure. But when the temperatures dropped Sunday night, like it got down to about minus 18, minus 20. So that night in the extreme cold, the tree above us, when the smoke came out of the chimney, it ran through the branch of that evergreen.
Yeah.
And all the moisture condensed on the evergreen spines and then all that condensation dropped onto the tent. So I had all this ugly creosote droppings
and
on the tent.
Sap and stuff too, or no?
I didn't notice any sap, but a lot of creosote. So you could Siobhan is like, hey, what's that on the roof? It's like, uh-oh.
On the side,
and you could see the smoke running right through the branches of the tree.
Yeah.
It was just condensing and dripping.
It's a white tent, is it not?
Yeah, I have that canvas. I'm going to try it.
Oh, yeah.
I have the canvas tent cleaner. I have the same thing.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if it'll work. Have you tried it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one looks perfectly sealed, like it's brand new.
We try it. We have two of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the other one's in the garage.
Yeah.
And we laid it out on the driveway, and we got our soap and water and bucket and all that sort of stuff.
And that cleaned out really good?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Sure. Why not? It got rid of the
mud.
The mud and stuff. But there's still stains on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, nothing's going to clean that unless you could throw that canvas tent into a massive washing machine.
Creosote, I don't think the creosote will ever come out.
Because you got to scrub it really, and then at some point you're destroying the canvas coating, right? The fireproof and waterproof coating on it.
Yeah.
So as long as the main big stains are out, and it's just a dull stain, then so be it.
But it was a good weekend. We had a lot of fun. It was nice to get away.
Good.
It was the unpacking part that...
Oh, that always kills you.
Well, it's not just that. Like, we couldn't get into our driveway, so we had to shovel the driveway first. So shoveled and snowblowed. Snowblower couldn't do the windrow because it was too thick of snow. And then after shoveling, we had to unpack. And so it was just... It was like, this sucks.
I noticed my neighbor was away for the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
But I didn't notice he was away for the weekend until... Athena and I were coming back from a walk, and we did a big walk, and we were coming around in front of his house, and he was almost done his driveway. That big, massive hump at the end of the driveway.
Oh.
Had I known, I would have had him start breaking it up, and I just would have got my snowblower, right? Yeah. And but, yeah, and I'm just looking like, better you than me, dude. Not trying to be mean, but if it had to be one of us. So, good. At least you got out there, and the kids kids are still enjoying it.
Oh yeah, they had a blast. They were enjoying it. Like we did. There was a lot of downtime too. Like so, I read a book. Stella read two books. She reads too fast, I think. I asked her once because I saw her finish a book, and then she went right to the front again and started reading it over again. And it's like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I read too fast. I miss stuff. Okay.
Well, she gets her money out of the book.
I'd say
or
so.
Or she gets your money out of the book.
But she read a whole book just in the big snowstorm at the height of the snow. We weren't going outside in it. And she read a whole book that afternoon. It's like, how is that possible?
Have you ever pointed her to your bookshelf? Look, books as far as the eye could see, untouched, unread. This is all going to be hers one day.
This will be yours one day. So I do have a bunch of books that I've saved for the kids, stuff that I've really liked. So there's one of them is called A Cruel Lie. It's all about, what do they call it? One word sounds like another. Like a nightmare could be a black female horse, a nightmare.
Oh.
Not puns, but it's...
Yeah.
I think it's puns.
No.
I don't know.
No.
Anyway. I'm saving that one because I enjoyed that one. I've read that one a couple times. I have used to read a lot more. Work kind of beat it out of me because I had to read so many manuals.
Right. Sure. Now we got audiobooks. I'm actually... there was this one series I used to read 30 some odd years ago, and they're on audiobooks now.
Oh, okay.
So at work or while I'm driving, I've started to download these and listen to them being read to me.
There you go.
And I'm like, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, yeah. I know what happens next. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't remember that. So, it's pretty cool to be able to do that. So good time had by all.
Yes.
And you'll go back again next year?
Yeah, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do next year. One thing that I want to get them out in off the beaten track. So, I don't think they're ready for my big plan, which is driving up to, like, Cochrane, taking the train and getting dropped off on the side of the tracks. North Sudbury,
I don't think they're...
I want to do that one of these years. But what I have checked into is there's a couple areas up near Algonquin that are... So on south end of Algonquin, was it Kingscote Lake area?
Yep.
There are a couple trails that go up into High Falls. And I've been asking around, and there's a couple people said that there's a lot of areas in that area of Algonquin Park that you can easily hike into with young kids, and it's not a lot. It's like maybe an hour to get to a nice campsite, and then another, a little bit to get to the falls. And so I think that would be a good idea for next year.
Yeah, at least get them started.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, get them working at it, snowshoeing in, and towing a sled or something, because they can each tow their small sled and make them work, right?
Right.
And, so I think that would be interesting concept to get them further off the beaten track. I think they should have been in sooner, but it's not just me that makes decisions.
Well, it should be.
But, yeah, Siobhan says, they're not ready for that. It's like, I think they are.
They aren't, or she's not.
I think that's what it might be. Yeah.
Oh, the truth comes out, Siobhan.
They're not ready for it. It's like, oh, I think they actually are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could take them out and bring someone along with you that, like talk to Mikey or something like that. Say, hey, looking at doing something different. He's always up for stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, or Mark, go up to Marcus's place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a lot of... Does he have crown land around him?
I believe so. Plus, he's got big property of his own.
Yeah, he does that. Right? Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. A plan is afoot.
Yeah. I'd like the Kings Cote area, the southern tip of Algonquin Park.
He might even join you down there.
Maybe.
It's good to have that extra set of hands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, Siobhan's very proficient, but she just doesn't think the kids are ready for it. Or, like you said, maybe it's her.
Kidnap them and go.
Yeah.
Throw her in the trunk.
Yeah. So what did you do? You just hung out.
I hung out. I went walking trails out this way with the dog.
Yeah.
Had a great time.
Excellent.
Got some stuff done around here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was about it. But there's things you missed.
Is there?
Yeah. A humpback whale briefly swallowed a kayaker.
Oh, yes.
In Patagonia. Yeah. Did you hear about that?
I did.
Released him unharmed because apparently they were catch and release.
It was John Van Berger sent that story.
Yeah, things like this happen and I receive it like 30, 40 times.
Yeah, I get a bunch of from people too. People, hey, did you see this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, hey, because
sometimes you miss it.
Everybody's going to send it or nobody's going to send
exactly.
it. Exactly. So send it along.
Yeah.
The incident caught on camera went viral. One of the most remarkable footage in Chile in recent years. Adrian Simancas was kayaking with his father, Del, in the Strait of Magellan when a humpback whale surfaced, engulfing Adrian in his yellow kayak for a few seconds before letting him go. Looked like it was an inflatable.
Yes. Too. So the story says that they're pack rafts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you saw the pack raft itself pop up in the video. Mm-hmm. So the guy was underwater for...
No, he popped up before the pack raft.
Did he?
I saw him first.
So
and then it popped up just past him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dell just meters away captured the moment on video while encouraging his son to stay calm. He said, I thought I was dead. I thought it had eaten me, that it had swallowed me. He described the terror of those few seconds, explained that his real fear set in only after resurfacing, fearing that the huge animal would hurt his father or that he would perish in the frigid waters. But despite the terrifying experience, Dell remained focused, filming, and reassuring his son while grappling with his own worry. So your son's just been eaten by a whale, and you're filming it. Well, hey. When I came up and started floating, I was scared that something might happen to my father, too, that we wouldn't reach the shore in time, or that I would get hypothermia. After a few seconds in the water, he managed to reach his father's kayak and was quickly assisted. Despite the scare, both returned to shore uninjured. Located about 1,600 miles or 3,000 kilometers south of Santiago, Chile, capital of the Strait of Magellan is a major tourist attraction in the Chilean Patagonia, known for adventure activities. Its frigid waters pose a challenge for sailors, swimmers, and explorers who attempt to cross it in different ways. Although it's summer in the southern hemisphere, temperatures in the region remain cool, with minimums dropping to 39 degrees Fahrenheit or 4 degrees Celsius. Highs rarely exceeding 68 Fahrenheit or 20 Celsius. While white whale attacks on humans are extremely rare in Chilean waters, whale deaths from collisions of cargo ships have increased in recent years. Strandings have become a reoccurring issue in the last decade. Means the whale populations are building.
Just yesterday, day before yesterday, there was like a couple dozen. So I've heard the term before, but I didn't get a chance to look it up. But they called them false killer whales.
Yep.
And so there was a couple dozen that got beached in Australia in the last day or two.
Mm-hmm.
So well, stuff like that does happen.
Yeah. I was reading something else about him being swallowed. Apparently they were having a conversation about orcas before that happened. And so, then all of a sudden.
So it was primed.
Yeah. And he was already at that level. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, kaboom.
Yeah.
Because out of nowhere. When you're watching the video, it's like there's no
Warning
whatsoever. Then all of a sudden, this big mouth opens. boom.
And you've seen it. I've seen it before, like off of Vancouver Island or Washington State. There was a woman got scooped up by a humpback or something.
Was that 2 years ago?
It was a couple of years ago. And she got spit out immediately as well. But you could see for a while there. And the video was very clear. Like, it was very clear video. And you could see that there was a paddle sticking out one way. The kayak was sticking out another way. And she was inside the mouth. And then it immediately spit her out. And it's like, but, you know, stuff like that. So humpbacks and stuff, they don't prey on humans. So it's an accident.
It was purely an accident.
It was trying to scoop up some small fish or something, and she happened to be in the way. And same thing as this guy. He just happened to be in the way.
Yeah.
Right? So, but, and there was also, I don't know if you heard about it, but now it's unfortunate, but I think it's just the nature of the way it happened. Turks and Caicos, Canadian woman down on vacation with family and friends, and they saw a shark. It was a bull shark. And so she saw the shark, and she tried to get a selfie with the shark, and the shark bit her thigh. Then she turned around to shove the shark away because it was biting her, and then it took both her hands.
Oh.
So she lost both hands, one mid-forearm, one at the wrist. And
ugh.
So don't do selfies with sharks.
Why? Did you see the kayaker kid that was kayaking? Oh, I can't remember where it was. I got is Australia, New Zealand. I think it was New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kayak fishing. And then all of a sudden, he starts getting stalked by a great white.
Oh, I didn't watch the video.
Bro, leave me alone, bro. Come on, mate. Go the other way.
I heard about
paddling
it.
Away, and this... Yeah. He said it was going after his rudder on his kayak.
Oh, okay.
Right? So...
Thought it was a flipper from a seal or something.
I don't know, but...
Zoinks.
There's a lot of big water animals out there, and they're all
there's more and more people out on the water, so you're going to have more interactions.
Yeah,
right. You can't help it.
But isn't that a full on Jaws moment when you're sitting there talking? What if an orca came up and ate us? And I was like, I'm never going back in the water ever.
Well, I need a bigger boat.
Right? Yeah, we're going to need a much bigger boat. But all's well that ends well. I guess the humpback went on its way, and they went on their way. And could you imagine? So, what's your claim to fame? Well, I got eaten by a whale once. What do you mean you got eaten? Well, I got better.
It spit me out.
It spit me out.
I wasn't tasty.
Yeah. I don't taste like fish. Spit it out.
This tastes like a human.
It would be a while, I think, before I went back in the water.
Yeah, it'd be a little nerve-wracking, right?
That water. So you want to go out in the ocean again? No.
No, I'm done.
No. If you're looking for me, I'll be at the indoor pool at the rec center. Yeah. I'm starting from square one again. You know Jackson Kayak?
Yes,
I do. You know Eddie Line?
I'm aware of them.
Jackson Kayak just acquired Eddie Line.
So this is a done deal?
They got Werner Paddles, and now they got Eddie Line Kayaks.
Jackson bought Werner Paddles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think we talked about that. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Thermoform Touring Kayak Eddie Line Kayaks has been acquired by Jackson Kayak, best known for its roto-molded whitewater and fishing kayaks. Production and sales of Eddie Line Kayaks will move from Seattle to the Jackson Kayak factory in Sparta, Tennessee. Jackson has a deep root in creating and providing jobs in Sparta, with many companies outsourcing and struggling with the changing tariffs, shipping costs, and production challenges. Jackson Kayak facilities provide a safe haven for Tennessee-made products. There are two things that you likely didn't know that help link Eddie Line and Jackson Kayak. Eddie Line started in whitewater kayak production, as did Jackson Kayak. Tom and Lisa Derer built whitewater boats in a tiny shop in Boulder, Colorado, starting back in 71. When the pair moved themselves and their business to Seattle in 74, and soon switched touring kayak production. Eddie Line has always been about crafting beautiful thermoformed lightweight kayaks that connect people to the water. We're excited to carry on the tradition forward alongside the Jackson team, says Scott Hawley, Eddie Line Kayak President. He'll make the transition with the company and be head of sales for Eddie Line under the Jackson Kayak ownership. It all started in 75 when the Darers met Werner Fuhrer, who designed their first sea kayak, the Eddie Line WT500, or Werner Touring 500 centimeters long. It's the same time Werner who went on to found Werner Paddles, another Washington-based company that was recently acquired by Jackson Kayak.
Hmm.
So the two of them out that way now heading to Tennessee. The first in-house design boat came in 78 called the Orca, a high-volume flat-bottom touring boat that helped establish Eddie Line's now iconic West Coast boat design style. Eddie Line, like Werner, is dedicated to the consumer journey and quality of its product. Very first kayak ever produced by Eddie Line was actually designed by Werner. So to have these companies that share a history and dedicated to paddle sports is inspiring. We don't want dedication or enthusiasm to be lost by being bought by an investment group or conglomerate that doesn't share our deep-rooted passions for the paddle sports. Our team has been working on this acquisition for some time, and our goal is to ensure each brand stays true to their path, says Emily Jackson. Which is cool, because everybody, it's just like vehicles. You drive a Subaru, I drive a Ford, somebody else drives a Dodge, somebody else drives a Toyota. You like your brand. There's things about your brand you like, right?
Yeah.
Same with boats.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely. Like I know a few people who do, like, really prefer the Jackson models.
Mm-hmm.
I have Wave Sport. My Whitewater is a Wave Sport. Yeah, there's so many brands out there. People prefer what they have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I agree with them. Like, when you... I don't know how many times you hear about it where some company, some organization is bought up by an investment portfolio.
Yeah.
And so it's just like a numbered company and they get in there. It's a bunch of investors and they expect profits and they expect this. So when they buy it, they obviously are going to crank the prices because they want immediate return on their investment. And it's oftentimes what you see is these companies will come in, buy up a product, buy up a company, and then break it down and sell it for parts, right? And unfortunately, it happens far too often, and or the investment company don't have the passion for the sport and industry. It's an investment, so they're not there to carry on the customs and the whatever. They're just there for the profit, and so a company can really die from the inside when an investment company buys them. So it's nice to see that Jackson is going to maintain the Eddie Line brand, but under another new label, right? So it's nice. It's nice to see that somebody with passion is going to carry it on.
Yeah, I worked for a office supply company. I won't name them many years ago, and a food catering style company bought them, trying to get into the bigger leagues and stuff like that. They owned other different restaurants and stuff, so they decided they would dip into the office supplies.
Doesn't seem like a good fit.
It was not.
Hmm.
They had no clue what they were doing.
Yeah.
There was more hassles and stupid decisions, but it was all about the money.
Oh, yeah.
The money, building the money.
They are like that.
Eventually, they were going so downhill, they sold it off and to another big office supply company, and it sort of rebounded.
Yeah.
So,
but sometimes too, you see companies that, like, if you make boats and you're going to buy that guy because he's your direct competition, hey, let's buy them up. They buy them up and no more competition, and then they close it down. Sometimes you see bigger corporations do that. They'll buy a smaller company because they're a threat to the bottom line.
Yeah.
Then they close it down. And it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. If they're making a few million dollars a year, then we buy them, then that few million dollars is ours.
It's in our pocket.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't always work that way.
No.
Jackson Kayak makes a wide range of kayaks, paddles, coolers, variety of other roto-molded products in its massive factory in Sparta. Bringing Eddyline thermoformed kayaks under that same roof and sales marketing infrastructure will likely help both companies grow quickly. Eddyline will instantly have more specialty retailers interested in its products. Jackson Kayak will instantly have new molding technology and machines and a full spread of kayaks to sell. Specifically, Eddyline fills in the touring and sea kayak categories where Jackson Kayak was light and or not in yet.
So they've diversified.
So they've molded both of them together into one, and now all of a sudden you got one kayak company with two.
Yeah. So now Jackson has a well-known popular brand under their roof with touring kayaks, which they didn't really develop a lot themselves.
Right. Perfect.
Yeah. It's perfect. A good fit.
Yeah. It's good to see that they'll be continuing on anyway. National Park Service. So you brought something to my attention here, and then I found something else. So I sort of combined
it. It ties in.
Yeah. National Park Service plans to increase its fees it levies on commercial users of the Upper Delaware River, fees to comprise 1.5% of revenue in 2025-26 and 2% in 2027 and 28 to cover the cost of managing the river. The river's commercial users have protested the move, while Canoe Livery saying they will have to pass the increase along to their customers. They've called the NPS to negotiate a more reasonable fee, but the National Park Service says its hands are tied. There's a federal law that requires National Park Service units to recoup what they spend in managing commercial activities, and the previous rates charged in the Upper Delaware were too low to be in compliance with that law, according to the National Park Service. The NPS originally announced the rate increase in July of last year. Since then, the NPS and the deliveries have not come any closer to finding an accord. These added costs just keep adding up to where families are going to be priced out of coming to the area, says Amy Sylvia, owner of Indian Head Canoes. National Park Service Superintendent Lindsay Kumath maintained the necessity of the increases. I'm going to do my job to bring the park unit into alignment with the law. Currently, we're out of alignment with the law, she says. So the law that allows the NPS to implement fees is part of a Commercial Use Authorizations, or a CUA, which is under the National Parks Omnibus Management Act of 1998. One of the terms of the CUA is that the Park Service shall require payment of a reasonable fee to be used at minimum to recover associated management and administrative costs. As Kumath explains it, if a park unit is going to have any kind of commercial operation, you need to recover all the costs of running that program. Increasing costs is proposed by the NPS to bring the Upper Delaware River closer to compliance with the law. Money from the Upper Delaware Park Unit brings in from CUA fees doesn't currently cover what the NPS spends in managing the Upper Delaware's CUA program. According to the minutes from a July 2024 presentation, the National Park Service recoups less than 30% of its costs under the current fee structure. That leaves a lot of money to be dished out. There were 105 commercial use authorization holders in the Upper Delaware River as of 2023, including canoe liveries, fishing guides, camps, and food trucks, according to the National Park Service. An organized opposition to the fee increase has arisen from the four largest canoe liveries along the river, Indian Head Canoes and Rafts, Kittatinny Canoes, Landers River Trips, and Silver Canoe and Whitewater Rafting. They say the increase is too much for them to absorb into their operations, and they will need to pass the additional costs on to their consumers.
Which is normal.
Mm-hmm. But they're saying it's going to be such a big jump that people are going to go like, no, like that's too much money now.
Yeah, and it's like the National Park Service they were initially at fault because they weren't tracking up and raising prices a little bit every year.
Year by year, yeah.
Instead, they made a giant jump this year.
Salvia and the NPS raised CUA, said the NPS raised CUA fees already in 2017. Well, that's almost 10 years ago. And the liveries absorbed the hike into the profits at that time. However, she said the 1.5% would need to be passed along to the liveries' customers, potentially as a line item on their bills marked NPS fee.
1.5%?
Yeah, so they would know where their money was going.
Yeah.
The fee increase might not cause a drastic change in price. An NPS fee of 1.5% would add an extra 98 cents per person to the average river trip. Calculated based on the average rate of canoe liveries, $65 per adult for one-day trip and weekend rates.
So
if it's going to cost me $66 instead of $65, do you really think that's going to stop me?
That's not a significant change.
If I can afford $65 for a day out on the river,
I can afford 60s.
And if it's a family of four, that's an extra $4. I think I could swing it.
But I wonder if they're going to do with the 98 cents that these companies are probably going to charge an extra $5, $10, $15.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're trying to get across is like, oh, it's going to be so much. We got to charge all this extra, and we're going to have to charge this, and we're going to have to charge. No.
It's 98 cents.
It's 98 cents. So that's going to follow that one and see what happens because I got to think they're just going to.
The sky's not falling. This is not a big change.
No.
I thought I was expecting some drastic change.
Well, when I was going through this, that's why I brought it. I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be a huge change. How much is my $65 a day now going to be $90?
It's going to hurt our business.
Right? Like, stick between $65 and $90.
Yeah, that'd be a big change.
I'm going to start thinking about stuff, right? But just going back to a few weeks back there, talking about Japan, there was some day trips I was looking at, $165 a person.
Oh, that's a lot.
I'm like, no. Sorry. As much as I'd love to go do that trip with you, I ain't doing it for $165 a person.
You're doing the log train, though, right?
I'm hoping to do that log train, man. Kitayama Gorge, river, yeah. So, sitting there thinking that, okay, well, people are saying there's these big increases, customers, and people aren't going to be out there doing these water trips, and they're not going to be camping and stuff like that. And then you sent me this article. Is a small fee increase a deterrent to those wanting to get outdoors? 26.8 million Americans went camping for the first time in 2024, but over half of the country's campers reported problems booking campsites. Now, this is an American article, but tell me you can just cross out American and put Canadian into any of this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because we've had the same issues here. That's the conclusion of a 2024 report from a camping app, The Dirt, with D-Y-R-T, which surveyed several thousand of the 81.1 million Americans who enjoyed some form of camping last year, whether with a tent, trailer, or RV. Despite rising prices impacting much of the U.S. economy last year, 4 out of 5 respondents said the country's inflation hadn't curtailed the frequency of their camping plans. In fact, other stats from the survey suggest a renewed commitment to enjoying the outdoors. More than 70% of campers in 2024 said they used all their reservations, a significant increase from the 59% who used all of them in 2023. So that would be the people that are reserving 4 weeks and using all 4 weeks, not reserving 4 weeks and not using half of them sort of deal.
Yes. Or reserving a long weekend or reserving a week and then it's going to rain. So they all cancel because who wants to go camping in the rain?
Right. The report did find that overall number of campers in 2024 declined slightly compared to 2023. However, the long-term trend shows more Americans showing interest in getting outside. While 2023 saw 21 million first-time campers, that jumped to 26.8 million in 2024.
That's first time.
5.8 million.
And we're not counting all the people who are repeat campers.
No, these are first time campers.
First time campers.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
In a wild year of economic and political uncertainty, it heartens me to think we will always camp, the Dirt founder Sarah Smith. Some trends may come and go, but the need to connect with nature and to connect with one another in nature is what helps humans stay grounded. While camping remains popular, it's not always easy to find a place to do it. Say it isn't so. From 2019 to 2022, the number of campers who reported difficulty finding a campsite rose from 10.6% to 58.4%. Hmm. According to the 2025 camping report presented by Toyota Trucks, after falling to 45.5% in 2023, it bounced back to 56.1% in 2024. Most of the problems booking sites resulted from campgrounds that were already full. Campsites are being added at private campgrounds all over the country to accommodate these growing number of campers, the Dirt CEO Kevin Long says. The difficulty in finding sites these days is more concentrated in the highly competitive public campgrounds and at certain sought-after properties and parks that have gained a level of fame in recent years. Everybody wants to go to the popular parks.
Yeah.
Right?
Joshua Tree or you know, Glacier National mm-hmm. Park. Or there's a lot of very popular yeah. ones.
But I mean, that's like here. I mean, winter camping is a big thing.
Yeah.
Try getting into Mew Lake.
Oh, stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
While Americans may find ways to camp even with higher prices, inflation is still driving up the price of campsites as well. Just under 39% of properties increased profits in or prices in 2024, a slight decrease from the 45.3% that did so in 2023. Of those properties that did increase, 78.7% cited inflation as a factor, and over a third of camping properties surveyed said they're likely to raise prices again in 2025. And people are still going.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But, I mean,
you can't help it. Yeah, the prices have to go up, and
yeah.
and it's with all these new campers and the popularity and trying to expand and trying to serve everybody that you can, expenses are still going to go up, and they're going to go up because of like higher staffing numbers.
Yep.
So you have to charge more.
And still, like, how many of these have electricity and,
exactly,
water
yeah.
and
yeah.
You know, you got the bathrooms, the bathroom stations yep. and stuff with yep. showers and
exactly
and all that full. Full yeah,
services that right? for.
Yeah. So if all those prices, if your electric prices are going up, you got to pass them off mm-hmm. to the customer.
And as we've seen here, even off of the designated campsites or campgrounds, like Crownland has never been more popular here in Canada. Like
yeah.
people, sure, it's free, but it's hard to find a nice place that isn't already taken by somebody else.
Right. How many Facebook and whatnot sites do you see, hey, looking to head out somewhere new. Has anybody got any good Crownland camping sites?
Nobody says a thing.
Right? Nope. No Crownland camping sites that we know of, because no one wants to give yeah. them up, right? So, yeah, they may say that people are going to start not going out if they raise the price
mm-hmm.
a buck. But if people are still going out camping due to inflation and the price of your campsites raised,
yeah,
they're still going to go out
and, oh, yeah.
and whitewater raft and yeah. stuff like that. So I really don't put much stock into that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of rafting, I've got one more thingy here. Illegal rafters have been prohibited from operating in the White River, Oco Rio, St. Anne, and members of Jamaica Constabulary Force, the JCF, and the Tourism Product Development Company, TPDCO, visited the area to enforce the ban. One of the rafters said the ban comes at a bad time, as February is known as rafting season, when many tourists visit the area. He expressed that rafting is what keeps him alive and that it's hard to find another source of income. TPDCO's Visitor Safety and Experience Coordinator O'Neill Fitton said that its decision to seek the intervention of the police in a bid to end illegal rafting at the river is not an attempt to adversely impact people's source of income. Instead, it comes in response to numerous security complaints from tourists who visit the area to enjoy rafting. Cruise ships continue to send reports about this specific location. I was there 2 weeks ago, and based on my attire, I assume a guest thought I was an official. And he came up to me and said, "Sir, I don't feel safe." These are the things we have to take into consideration. I went through, I Googled this, went down a bit of a rabbit hole.
I did too, and I did read all the reviews.
And some people going like, they take you, you hop on the raft, and you're seeing signs saying, "You've been scammed, these are illegal rafters." And they take you to this beach where it's so crowded. It's a small beach.
Commercialized.
Yep. And they disappear to go smoke with some friends or something. Mm-hmm. And you're there for an hour. We're ready to move on here.
And
there's, you know, like trash being burned on the edge of the beach.
And there's vendors hawking their wares. Hey, buy this. Want a bracelet? Want a necklace? It's very commercialized. I was reading all the reviews, and anybody who thought it was fantastic were most likely people who liked the party and whatever, because they sell beer on this mm-hmm. river. It's like a lazy river ride.
Yeah.
And so there's bamboo rafts, there's tube rafts, there's whatever that you could float down on. And so lots of vendors are selling their wares, but the people who gave it 5 stars are like the people who like all the music that's blasting and the partying feeling, and it depends on where you are in the river. Some people are saying like, "Oh, it's very serene, it's very beautiful. I love it here. It's you're out in nature, but it's really right in the middle of the city, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just a chunk of park with a short river, slow moving river, but it's neat because it kind of flows down, and you got like 100 feet between the river and the ocean. Once you get down to the bottom of it, they say the water's super cold.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's so cold. So I don't know. I can see where some people have an issue with the commercialization of it.
Yeah. Fitton further outlines the White River has to go through a process of restoration in an effort to protect the tourism product and ultimately brand Jamaica. Right now, White River is like a sick cancer patient, and in order to treat it, it has to go through a process to be cured. Police maintain that the rafters had from 2023 to become registered.
So, and that's the issue, because if these people are complaining that they're not allowed to run their business, it's like, well, why didn't you register it? You'd be allowed to do it.
Because there's probably a whole bunch of safety precautions.
Yeah.
You got to put in the money to make the money.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Police are urging illegal rafters to make the necessary arrangements with White River Calypso Rafting and Tubing, which is the only licensed entity to operate on the river. In the meantime, People's National Party caretaker for Northeast St. Anne, Dr. Ryan Simpson, is urging the authorities to reconsider the ban, as it will significantly affect rafters' livelihoods. While this has been the livelihood for those operators to support their family, they have been given strict evacuation orders. Deputy Superintendent of Police Rochelle McGibbon Scott of the St. Anne Police Division has ordered the raft operators to evacuate the river in an effort to prevent the recurrence of a March 2023 police military operation in which unauthorized rafts and other vessels on the river were destroyed.
Hmm.
There was like 80 rafts and boats and stuff like that. They just torched them.
Yeah.
Just destroyed them.
Illegal.
Yeah. 2023, the authorities moved into the space and did what was called a shock and awe effect. So they took control, confiscated, dismantled the rafts that were on the water. We don't want to do that this time around, but if come Thursday, this week, is not evacuated, we will be forced to dismantle the rafts, and police officers will be placed within the space to ensure no operation is happening. St. Anne Police are urging persons, especially tour bus operators, to desist from transporting tourists to the White River in Oco Rios in the parish for illegal rafting.
There you go.
I mean, if all it takes is to register and throw a couple bucks into.
Yeah, I wonder what the process is about, yeah. Because for some reason people are resisting registering as a rafting company. So if you're resisting, is it because it's an onerous process? Is it an expensive process? Is there some sort of fee and kickback that you're expected to pay into? Or is it just simple as here are the rules, this is how you have to maintain safety, make sure your customers are wearing life jackets, yada, yada, yada.
And they don't want to follow the rules.
They don't want to follow the rules.
No responsibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't know. No, none of that. I couldn't find anything on any of that or what it takes to register.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's got to be more to it than just going and saying, hey, I want to register. Sign here.
Otherwise, they would have done it.
Otherwise, everybody would have done it.
Something is stopping them from registering. Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to Oco Rio, so want to do a rafting trip.
There's only one company you can go to.
Only one company you can go to. That's all I've got, except for this weekend, Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show.
Yes.
International Center.
I may make it on Sunday.
You might make it on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Let me know if you're going to go on Sunday.
Yeah, because I'm going to a play.
You're getting some culturification.
Yes, it's a family thing. Everybody's gathered together. I can't remember what it's called, but it's in Port Hope. So it should be fun. Fun.
You're going to text me saying, please call me and say some kind of emergency to get me out of this.
It's called Something's Rotten. Something Rotten.
The play. The play was rotten.
I have no idea what it's about.
Hey, just showing up.
Yeah.
I was told I had to be there. Well, I will be there Saturday and Sunday. Outdooradventureshow.ca for more information. And then next weekend, we're heading to East Lansing, Michigan.
Yes.
To the Quiet Adventure Symposium, where we will set up our booth. We will set up our recording equipment. We will have different people in our booth, and we will record them yapping with us.
Yeah.
And all will be good.
I got to check my expiry date on my passport.
I got mine today. Mm-hmm. What a difference 10 years makes on your passport picture.
Yeah, you're ugly either way.
But my head's gotten rounder. Like on the top.
Has it?
Yeah. Yeah. I look angrier now.
Your wife did say that.
Yeah.
Why are you so angry?
I'm not. They told me don't smile, so I didn't smile. Yeah. No, I look angry.
Yeah, you're not allowed to smile on passport.
See, this passport, that's the passport of a serial killer.
You do look like a serial killer.
Well, you're from Russia. That's what I was going for. Nailed it.
I'm pretty sure mine expires in 2027.
I got mine for 10 years, so mine expires in 2035.
There you go.
Woot, woot. Canucopia, which we are not attending. I'm not attending anyway. Madison, Wisconsin, March 7th to 9th. Rutabaga.com for more information on that one. Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, Nepean, Ontario, April 26th to 27th. AdventureOttawa.ca for info on that. I might take a drive out for that for the day. See family and whatnot out there. Maybe. The Paddle Sports Show. Are we going to this one?
I'd like to.
Strasbourg, France?
Mm-hmm. We should.
September 20th, October 2nd?
When's
August, September. Oh, no. I'm back the third week of August. I think it's the second weekend of September. I'm up in Temagami. And this would be the weekend after. We could do that.
This is like 2 weeks. This is a 2 week show.
Yeah. And?
What do you do for 2 weeks? That's a long show. Must be popular.
It's probably the only one out there. Yeah, there's tons of stuff there. Anyway, thepaddlesportsshow.com. Google that. Check it out. Mm-hmm. And see what there is to do there.
Yes, and let us know as well.
And if you're going to France, you're going to be doing more than just going there.
No, just there and back.
We're going there. We're seeing the show. We're not seeing anything else.
Nothing.
Not a thing.
If we drive past the Eiffel Tower, I'm closing my eyes.
Right? Because don't want to spoil it. I might go there some other day. Specifically, let's go to Paris and see the Eiffel Tower. I've seen it. I drove by it once. It's just a big pointy thing.
Yeah.
It looked like one of those big electrical tower just see out in the field.
Yeah, with it's just
with
a hydro tower.
Yeah, one of those hydro towers. Except pointy.
Yeah.
Seen one big metal tower. You've seen them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you see us at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show next weekend or the Quiet Adventure Symposium the following weekend, you better stop by and say hello or we're going to be very,
absolutely,
very upset. And we'll never talk to you again. you got anything else?
I do not.
You do not. Well, hot diggity. Time to go outside and enjoy some more of this nice, deep snow, which will eventually turn into raging rivers.
Well, it's going to be good. So this will be, like anybody who likes spring tripping, there's going to be a lot of runoff, a lot of snow to melt.
Yeah, and, keep safety in mind.
And farmers are going to be excited because they're going to have a lot of runoff to in the spring to pre-water all the farmland. So
kill some of the grubs and stuff.
Starting out with dry land for planting crops. So yeah, it's good. It's nice to see all this extra snow. Hopefully, we don't have one of those flooded Lake Ontario years because we've had that in the past.
Right? Well, it doesn't affect my house.
Yeah, you're quite a level up, but some people it bothers.
And I went out in my backyard, and in all that deep snow, I made a couple of trails and a couple of big circles so somebody can go out and do their business, being the good dog dad that I am.
So.
And she does not use them. She just does her business right in the middle of the trail.
Oh, yeah? Do you pick it up or do you wait for spring and go harvesting?
I went to pick it up and then the snow covered it all. So it'll be a spring. Hopefully it melts enough, but it's still solid enough that I can pick it up. I have been diligently scooping. Mm-hmm. Up until the big snowstorms happen. So there's not a ton of it under there. So, but I watch where she goes, so I know.
It's marked.
I know where the huskies go.
I've made a mental note of where I can harvest fertilizer in the spring.
Right? And it's close to the fence, so I can just hoop it over into my neighbor's yard.
Perfect.
Right? Excellent. All righty. Well, if you want to find us more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.